The following podcast contains explicit content and is not suitable for all listeners. According to Statistics Canada, the prevalence of spousal homicide was highest after marital separation, though only for women. From 2007 to 2011, a woman's risk of being killed by a legally separated spouse was nearly six times higher than their risk from a legally married spouse. Jealousy of the female victim was more often a factor in homicides of legally separated spouses at 25%. Over the same five-year period, no men were killed by their separated or divorced spouse. Similar to spousal homicides of women, jealousy was more often a motive in homicides against previous dating partners over those same 5 years, compared to homicides against current dating partners, 29% versus 16%. On December 15th, 2011, four young adults were heading to the airport after a night out celebrating when the ex-boyfriend of one of the women forced them off the road and then shot at the vehicle, killing three of the passengers before turning the gun on himself. This is the story of Tabitha Stepple and the Claire's Home Highway shooting. Tabitha Samara Stepple was born on October 15, 1990, to parents Renee and Randall Stepple in Lethbridge, Alberta, Canada. In her obituary, it says she was survived by her older siblings, sister Teresa and brother Trevor, and by her younger brother Nelson. It also states she was predeceased by her sister Miranda and brother Jason. And at first, I thought that another tragic event possibly occurred to the family, but I couldn't find any information about her deceased siblings other than the one mention of them in the obituary. So I am assuming they are possibly miscarriages, stillborn, or something of that nature, which is still tragic and awful and worthy of being mentioned. I just mean that there are no news articles about their deaths. If I am incorrect and miss something, please do share it on my Instagram at femicide_podcast, as I always strive to be as accurate as possible when discussing these cases. It's also not my aim of this podcast to only cover Canadian stories, as I have covered other countries in the past. But lately, as I'm researching new stories, I'm sadly finding so many in my own backyard that I've chosen to focus on those just for the time being. That question was asked recently, and I wanted to clear that up, and I will continue to share women's stories from a variety of different countries and racial and socioeconomic backgrounds. Lethbridge is located in the southern area of the province of Alberta in Canada and has a population of 101,482 as of 2019. Alberta is known as one of the prairie provinces of Canada and is bordered by Saskatchewan to the east and British Columbia to the west. The state of Montana in the U.S. is located to the south, and the border is approximately 110 kilometers or 68 miles, so roughly a little over an hour's drive from Lethbridge, just to give you a bit of geographical understanding. On the evening of the murders, the group was traveling to the airport in the city of Calgary, which is located 215 kilometers or 133 miles north of Lethbridge. Calgary is the fourth most populated city in Canada with 1,514,723 people as of 2019. According to Lethbridge's Wikipedia page, quote, "The only university in Alberta south of Calgary is in Lethbridge, and two of the three colleges in southern Alberta have campuses in the city," end quote. So the city very much has that college town association to it as well. And random fact, but I actually applied to the University of Lethbridge myself, only because I was born in Alberta and a friend of mine was applying and I thought it sounded good at the time. I don't think I ever had any intention of actually going, but I knew of the city and the school, which made this particular story resonate with me, and for a few other reasons that I'll touch on later. Tabitha was born and raised in Lethbridge and lived there her whole life. She was described as having, quote, an old soul, end quote, and that she, quote, lived life to its fullest, end quote. Her family was the most important thing to her, and she taught those around her to deal with life, quote, in an admirable way, end quote. In her eulogy, her siblings told stories about her constant good humor, infectious laugh, and love for life. Pictures were displayed of her snowboarding, vacationing, dancing, and always with friends and family. During her funeral, a video played with her singing along to a Lady Gaga song with a friend in her car, a testament to the joy she brought to the lives of all that knew her. In her obituary, it listed a memorial bench that was dedicated in her honor and read, quote, "Life is not about waiting for the storm to pass. It's about learning how to dance in the rain," end quote, which sounds like it sums up Tabitha's spirit perfectly. Tabitha met Derek Jensen in late 2010 at a nightclub called Studio 54 in downtown Lethbridge, and the two hit it off immediately. Studying to be a paramedic, 21-year-old Derek was described as quiet but well-liked, and being raised Mormon, his religion was important to him. In his spare time, he enjoyed hunting, caring for his guns, and was an avid skeet shooter. He was also apparently quite the ladies' man, and according to his childhood friend, had been in relationships his whole life. Quote, "He had girlfriends before we knew what girls were," end quote. Initially, everything was wonderful in their relationship, and Tabitha's friends and family really liked Derek and were happy for the two. They quickly escalated their relationship and moved in together into a basement apartment in downtown Lethbridge. That's when things began to shift. According to Tabitha's friend, Caitlin, quote, "I loved him when I first met him, but after they moved in together, he really changed," end quote. By friends' accounts of events, both witnessed and heard from Tabitha herself, Derek began to get extremely possessive and jealous of Tabitha, even saying that Caitlin was a bad influence because they would go out together often, too much in his eyes. One friend named Claire is quoted as saying, quote, "She would tell me he's very controlling. She would say things like, 'I'm not allowed to do things without him. He wants to know where I am and what I'm doing,'" end quote. He would text and call constantly, yell and cause fights, break or punch objects, and eventually became physically abusive on at least one occasion. Quote, "He put his fist through their window, punched a huge dent in the rear driver's side of his car, told her he killed her dog. Last weekend, after he broke their window, he slammed her against the wall in his room, and that's when she told him to get out. He was supposed to move to Edmonton Thursday morning," end quote. They had lived together just 5 months and had apparently split sometime near Halloween, but stayed living together due to the apartment lease, although clearly there was some back and forth between the two, as is common with these types of toxic relationships. Although Derek was also from Lethbridge, he had been taking classes to become a paramedic at the Northern Alberta Institute of Technology in the city of Edmonton, which is about 500 kilometers or 310 miles north. Reports say he was, quote, "shuttling back and forth," end quote, and others say he transferred to Lethbridge Community College to complete his program. I'm inclined to believe he transferred, as that is at least a 5-hour drive each way, But either way, it appears he was living in Lethbridge at that time to be with Tabitha. After their breakup, Derek decided it best to move to Edmonton and get a fresh start. He had just one final test before he could begin working as an EMT. I couldn't find much about his family or childhood, but his actions in the events of that night definitely shocked his friends and family. One friend interviewed stated, quote, "He was the complete package. He was very smart with lots of potential, down to earth. He had school smarts, street smarts, was great with his hands, athletic, good looking. He was the rock in his family, had brothers and sisters he loved, and his parents are wonderful people. And on top of that, he was the nicest guy," end quote. I would quickly like to touch on this because the same article goes on to say, quote, "There has to be more to the story. He was too smart and driven for this to have happened for no reason. It had to be a mix of booze and rage or something else that happened to him, but we may never know," end quote. I completely understand that we don't want to believe the person we've known, potentially our whole lives, is capable of such violence. I think we worry about what it says about us, those who trusted them and loved them. The thing is, we never fully know anyone or what they're capable of, not really. Especially with cases of domestic violence or mental abuse, it's often just the victim who gets to witness this change. It's part of the abuse, because the person they fell in love with is still there and shows themselves for everyone else. So it makes the victim hope and believe that person is their real side, and if they are good or can make their partner happy, then they too can have that good side. When, in actuality, that mean side is the real them, and the good side is like a mask, there to keep up appearances. I've discussed some of my experiences in previous episodes, but I personally have dealt with this myself and also witnessed a good friend go through it as well. They only show what they want to show and when they want to show it. Comments like that also lend themselves to victim blaming. There must have been a reason for this to happen. He was too nice. He was too smart. Implying that if Tabitha hadn't provoked him, just listened to him, didn't go out as much, etc., then this wouldn't have happened, and that's just not true. Other things would have kept coming up, other reasons to get angry, even with other partners. Derek had underlying issues he needed to work on, period. There were also signs. Sometimes we only hear one side of a story and don't have all the information. And often, in retrospect, there are some warning signs that we don't recognize in time. In this case, there were warning signs leading up to and including that night. Tabitha's friend Caitlin knew exactly what had happened when she heard the news. She saw the signs, but unfortunately still did not heed their warning. You never think it could escalate so far, so quickly. I truly do wish Derek had the chance to seek professional help, and these four lives could have been saved. I also think Tabitha was an extremely smart and strong woman. She saw those warning signs early on, and while she did try to make it work for a bit, she definitely stood her ground and said enough, asking him to move out. That takes courage. The night of Wednesday, December 14th, 2011, Derek's friends took him out to celebrate his move to Edmonton, which was happening the following day. He had been sad about the breakup, and his friends made the effort to get him out and cheer him up. At around 8 p.m., the group entered Shark Club, which is a sports bar, to play pool and have fun. Everything was going well, and the group was enjoying themselves. One friend of Derek's stating, quote, "He seemed calm, collected, he was happy," end quote. The group then decided to get a change of scenery and went across the street to Blarney Stone Pub, a local spot very popular with the student crowd. That is when Derek spotted Tabitha sitting at a table with two males, 20-year-old Mitch McLean and 22-year-old Tanner Craswell. Also at the table was 21-year-old Shayna Conway. Tabitha worked with both Shayna and Caitlin at Montana's Cookhouse, and Shayna and Tanner were dating. I also read that Mitch's girlfriend was also there that night, a girl named Kevin, who walked them out at the end of the night to their car, as well as Tabitha's friend Caitlin, who I previously mentioned. It's reported that only the four were sitting at the table at the time that Derek first saw Tabitha that night, and he flew into a jealous rage and proceeded to go over to her and start an argument. According to Caitlin, during the altercation, he pushed Tabitha from her chair, although Derek's friend claims he didn't see her fall, but that he did escort Derek out of the pub and they returned back to the sports bar they had originally been. Not long after, at around 12:30 p.m., Derek left the bar saying he was heading home to finish packing and leave for Edmonton. Derek was aware that Tabitha was driving her friend to the airport, with a friend of his stating, quote, "She was supposed to be driving a friend to Calgary to catch a plane," said Jensen's high school friend, Riley, adding Jensen was likely startled to see her hanging out with two guys he didn't recognize, end quote. It was Tanner's 22nd birthday, and so the group decided to stay out later to celebrate and drive straight to the airport. Shayna Conway, her friend from work, had moved to Lethbridge to follow her boyfriend Tanner, who along with Mitch had moved from Prince Edward Island on the east coast of Canada to play baseball for the Lethbridge Bulls, a summer college baseball league, and a member of the Western Canadian Baseball League. Considered to be, quote, "more like brothers," end quote, the two were rising stars in baseball, with bright futures ahead of them. Quote, "they were expected to be key components to a winning lineup that we had. Tanner was an all-star shortstop last year in the league, and Mitch was rookie of the year," end quote, said Kevin Cavmi, Bulls president and general manager. Their former coach also stated that Tanner was even preparing to head to the U.S. to play college baseball. They loved baseball and were living out their dreams, getting to do what they loved. Their former teammate stated, quote, "I think everybody in the province is kind of in a state of shock. They made an impression not just on ball players, but people who knew them too, outside of baseball. They made lasting impressions on everybody. They were both just great guys," end quote. And a friend from their hometown remembered a time that even deep snow didn't stop them from giving his younger brother a practice session. Quote, "Tanner and Mitch would have a catch with them in the dead of winter with snow up to their shins, just to help them out. That's the kind of people they were," end quote. I liked these particular quotes as I felt it really spoke to their character, that even though baseball was a large part of their identities, they are remembered for their kindness and for being good people, not just for being good ball players. Shortly after the altercation between Tabitha and Derek at around 1 a.m., the group went back to the guy's house to get their bags, pack up the car, and head to the airport. They were heading home to PEI for Christmas break to see their families, and the women were taking them to the airport in Tabitha's vehicle. I can't stress this enough, but the passengers in this vehicle had nothing to do with what happened, nor were they particularly connected to Tabitha or her relationship to Derek, since Derek hadn't even met the guys prior. They were simply new friends, and sadly in the wrong place at the wrong time. Caitlin was supposed to take the drive as well, but according to her, there was a laundry hamper that they couldn't get to fit into the vehicle, and so she offered to stay back. They started their journey at around 2 a.m., heading to Calgary International Airport, roughly a 2.5-hour drive, with their flight scheduled to leave at 5 a.m. All the while, Derek was calling and texting Tabitha about the events of the evening. In one particularly ominous call, he said, quote, "This night's not going to end well for you. I hope you know that," end quote. I'd like to take this moment to thank you for listening to my podcast. The concept behind femicide is very close to my heart, and I hope through these stories we can shed a light on the abuse, violence, and sexual assault that women face daily. This podcast is 100% a one-woman operation. I research, write, record, and edit every single episode myself. To help support me and my efforts, I have now started a Patreon account. If you aren't familiar with Patreon, it is a membership-based platform designed to allow fans to support and connect with their favorite creators. For just $5 per month, your membership will allow you premium access to one bonus episode released on the 30th of each month, exclusively on Patreon. The first bonus episode was released last month, and it is the story of Nancy Eaton, a 23-year-old heiress who was murdered in her own home by a childhood friend. And a new episode will be available on the 30th of June, and that is the story of Christine Demeter, a 33-year-old woman who mysteriously died in the garage of her own home. Sign up today online at patreon.com or via the Patreon app. Again, I will leave the link in the show notes of this episode. As always, I will be donating 10% of all gifts received and memberships every month to various charities that help support women. The charity I will be donating to for the month of June 2021 is Women's College Hospital. Located in Toronto, WCH is a leader in health for women, health equity, and health system solutions. Quote, "We advocate for health equity because we know that a healthy society requires a level playing field where everyone has access to timely, high-quality, efficient, and compassionate care," end quote. Gifts, while deeply appreciated, are not the only way you can show support. It would mean a lot if you would subscribe to my podcast and leave a review, as it really helps bring awareness to these stories. And please, don't forget to share with your friends and families, because word of mouth is the best review of all. At around 3 a.m., the group stopped at a convenience store called 7-Eleven in Claire's home, Alberta, about 50 minutes from Lethbridge, which is where it is confirmed that Derek Jensen, driving in his green Pontiac Sunfire, came upon Tabitha's SUV. Footage from the store shows the group completely unaware of Derek's presence, and they piled back into the vehicle to continue on. There are claims he actually followed them out of Lethbridge, but according to police, he had been searching and came upon them, knowing she had mentioned taking her friend to the airport. Moments after leaving the store, Derek rammed into the back of the SUV, prompting the driver, who was at this time Shayna Conway, to pull over and get out to confront the driver. That is when Derek stepped out holding his Heckler & Koch 9mm handgun and shot Shayna right there at the side of the highway. The shot hit her with so much force she crumpled to the ground, where he shot her three more times. He then moved towards the vehicle and opened fire, shooting into the car. He reloaded his gun twice and fired a total of 28 bullets. He killed Tanner and Tabitha instantly before turning the gun on himself. Mitch McLean had been shot but escaped the vehicle and crawled into a nearby ditch. Shayna, miraculously alive, crawled to her phone to dial 911. When help arrived, they located Mitch and rushed him to the local hospital, where he was then airlifted to Foothills Medical Center in Calgary. Unfortunately, he never made it. He sadly succumbed to his injuries and was pronounced dead. In Derek's car, there was also a 12-gauge shotgun and a loaded Winchester rifle, all of which were properly registered and not uncommon for avid shooters or hunters like him. There was also no reports of domestic violence to the police at any point during Derek and Tabitha's relationship, and neither were known to police for any reason. Hindsight is always 20/20, and there were signs, but Derek's extreme actions that night, I don't think they really could have been anticipated, not even by those that knew of his violent tendencies. Shayna Conway was the only survivor. One of the bullets broke her neck. The others shattered her shoulder blade and broke her ribs. One bullet also lodged in her thigh. The fact that she even dragged herself to her phone is remarkable, let alone that she recovered. That is a miracle. Following that night, Shayna had 7 surgeries and countless hours of physiotherapy, even relearning how to walk. Her left hand has been deemed permanently immobile. She has a lot of nerve pain, and her one leg is weaker, causing her to fall on occasion. The physical pain is nothing compared to the mental trauma she has dealt with. In an interview in 2014, she said, quote, "Oh, the physical is the easy part. It's strange because I thought learning how to walk a second time was going to be the hardest thing I've ever had to do. I would rather learn how to walk 19 times over again than have to deal with what I'm dealing with emotionally and mentally now." End quote. Anxiety and depression became a part of her life, along with constant nightmares. Shayna began distancing herself from friends and family, and she began some high-risk behaviors, tempting fate by not wearing her seatbelt, speeding, drinking excessively, and so on. She didn't feel like her life mattered and that she was unworthy. She ended up seeking professional help and entered a 2-month treatment program at Homewood Health Center located in Guelph, Ontario, which is a few provinces west of her hometown in PEI. There she got the help she so desperately needed and began to see the light at the end of her dark tunnel. Quote, "I didn't feel real. I felt invisible and empty and a hollow shell. That I was like a picture, like I was 2D. People just don't live through what I have lived through. It's basically impossible." End quote. She still struggles with the nightmares and depression, but she's learned to cope, and in a recent article I found, she has turned her tragedy into a new career in which she gets to help others. Shayna graduated last year in May 2020 from the University of Prince Edward Island with a Bachelor's of Science in Nursing degree. For someone who describes her outlook on life as she survived so that she could be here to, quote, "do God's work," end quote, her timing in graduating does seem like destiny. As we know, in early 2020, the COVID pandemic started, and I'm sure she is now out there making a difference to many other people. While researching Shayna, I did stumble upon an article about her father that I found just honestly bizarre. And while it has nothing to do with this story, I wanted to mention it simply for its strange coincidence. In 1982, when Shayna's father, Scott, was 21, the same age Shayna was at the time of her attack, he stabbed a 20-year-old man named Warren Leach to death in a jealous fit of rage. They had got into an argument over Scott's ex-girlfriend, and he stabbed Warren 16 times before fleeing the scene. It took help almost an hour to arrive, and Warren died on his way to hospital. Scott was told about Warren dying after police picked him up, and he apparently was so sickened with his actions, he threw up. He then was charged with second-degree murder, and after 4 trials, was sentenced in 1990, and spent 7 years in prison. He entered prison just days after Shayna was born and strived to work hard and better himself for his family. Reading the article, while it appears he does take full responsibility for his actions, he also spoke mostly about how the murder affected his life and how he had to overcome the murder to make something of himself. Articles like reality TV or Instagram can be edited in a way as to be biased, and even in depth can still be just a snapshot of a person. I'm sure, especially after witnessing murder from the side of the victim with the attack on his daughter, he now has a deeper understanding of how his actions really impacted others if he didn't already before. But also, I get rage can be blinding, but stabbing someone 16 times does not feel like an accident or unintentional. And 4 trials seems unnecessary to put the family through when you clearly admitted guilt. I'd really like to hear what you think. I'll leave a link to the article in the show notes of this episode, and I'd love to get your opinions on Scott's case and discuss this episode. Remember, you can always comment on my Instagram at femicide_podcast or my Facebook, Femicide Podcast. The loss of these young lives was felt from coast to coast. A memorial game of catch was played in Mitch and Tanner's honor in PEI by their friends and family. And memorial services were held in both PEI and Lethbridge. Shayna even attended the Lethbridge service in a wheelchair to honor her friends and her boyfriend. One article I read had a section I want to share now. Quote, amid the grief on PEI, there was a solidifying sense that the family of Mr. Jensen needed to be remembered as well. Parishioners at Winslow United spoke about how terrible it would be for his parents to lose a son and then have to remember him as a murderer. What level of torment he must have been going through, said a person close to the victims who did not want to be identified. End quote. I just thought that in a time of such immense grief, how unbelievable that anyone could find such love in their hearts. It really gave me pause, and I had to share that. A scholarship was created at Lethbridge College in Tabitha's honor as a way to keep her memory alive. The scholarship is, quote, awarded to a student continuing in a School of Justice Studies program with a minimum GPA of 2.5. Recipients must be active in a volunteer capacity in an area that provides service to others, such as victim services or working with vulnerable populations, end quote. Her mother stating, quote, she'll never be forgotten. Every year when they give out that scholarship, she will be remembered. End quote. In their short lives, these 3 young people, Tabitha, Mitch, and Tanner, left lasting impacts on everyone who knew them and throughout Canada. I could go on and on with the lovely quotes I read, but I thought I'd read 2 from Tabitha's mother and sister that I think really capture the sentiments of the story. Her mother stated, quote, you have to move forward. I've always said, you can either sit in your pity and be angry or sad, or just move forward and do the things you have to do in life and enjoy them. She would want that. She wouldn't want anything different. End quote. Her sister added, quote, it's what helps bring you through those tough times. Having that support, family support, community support, support from your colleagues, friends. We have had support from all across Canada. End quote. Thank you for listening to the story of Tabitha Stepple and the Claire's Home Highway shooting. I'm your host, Sean Marie. Join me next time for another story.